The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 262. Today is Wednesday, September 10th, 2008. Welcome, everybody.
How you doing?
Dan, you hanging on for dear life? How you doing over there?
I've been better. The stomach bug is awful, but I'm here unlike the other two guys. Punked out.
That's okay. We carry on no matter what. We got a fantastic guest tonight. We got Solway Haglund, author and open office instructor. Solway, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's our pleasure.
Sorry to hear about the stomach bug, by the way.
Oh, thanks. That's all right. But I didn't want to miss this because I'm really excited. Open office
there we
is
go.
Great.
So I guess, Solway, you can give us a little background how you got involved with open office and what you've done.
Well, I started working for Sun Microsystems in, 98, and that was around the time that they bought Star Office. And I was working in actually the Java course development group at the time as an editor and tech writer. And my friend Floyd, who was working there too, was daydreaming in a meeting, and he, at the end of the meeting, must have been pretty boring because he had this whole plan about how he and I should write a Star Office book. And I looked at him and said, okay. And we thought about it and thought it would be a huge amount of work, but we did anyway. Got a contract through Pearson Prentice Hall. And it's pretty much the most fun I've had professionally.
So you've been living open office for quite a long time now.
Yeah, we wrote the first book in 2000, finished it up in October of 2000, and then I left. I decided to go out on my own because I like to take risks, and I believe that was 2002, and I've been teaching and writing books and consulting, helping people plan their transitions and stuff since then.
Now, you do a lot of teaching, and I guess my biggest question is, what kind of reactions do you get from people as far as the perception of what OpenOffice is and what it can do?
Well, there is the whole it's free, how can it be good thing. And I try to overcome that by just showing that it's a different business model, that, you know, it's the whole you shouldn't have to pay for the software, then you pay for services if you so choose. It's a lot of, I mean, the folks that I interact with first, of course, are the IT Linux folks who run the departments, love OpenOffice, have been using it since 5.1, since StarOffice 5.1, and love it and know that it can do everything that Microsoft can. And then people teach are generally the polar opposite, who haven't heard of it and are skeptical because it is rarely the choice of the person working at the city government or the person working at the school. They're not the ones that choose to switch office seats, and so they're often a little confused and a little wary at best when they come in. And I try to overcome that by showing them how incredibly similar it is. I have a little thing that I go through where I show the two toolbars, and I ask them to identify which one is Word and which one is Writer. And they usually can, but it takes a while.
So who are you, is your training targeted to? Is this towards businesses?
Some businesses. My businesses range from folks who do some really high-tech translation and tech searching. It was founded by a bunch of MIT graduates. I've trained actual rocket scientists. And then there's also just small companies looking to save money, of course, as a lot of folks do. Then there's schools. There are city governments or state governments, county governments. Those are the big three types of categories.
Now, one of the things that piqued my interest right there was schools. Is this K through 12 schools and or colleges or both?
K through 12. I mean, I've gotten some inquiries from junior colleges who are looking at using the materials, but I do train some schools, which are, I get the impression that change doesn't happen real fast in schools.
Wheels
it's
of
not
change move
always
slow.
Yeah. And a lot of curriculum is tightly integrated with specifically Microsoft Office. So you have textbooks that tell you specifically how to chart your scientific data that you've received in the science lesson using specifically Excel. So that's an interesting challenge. I hadn't realized how tightly Microsoft was integrated with curriculum until I started teaching schools.
You would think it would be a no-brainer, you know, Open Office and education. And it's just sort of simple fact that, you know, the schools wouldn't have to pay license to everybody they distribute copies to.
Absolutely. And the kids go home and they sit at home. We're, you know, working on, you know, spreading it throughout, crossing the digital divide, you know, spending money on what's important, not Microsoft Office, but education and higher teacher salaries and smaller classroom sizes and all the good stuff. The future of the country, you know. Take amount that you're not spending on Microsoft Office and on Windows licenses for that matter and spend it on really good education, the stuff that, you know, teachers are begging for, you know. But a little more complicated, I guess.
See, that's one of the barriers to entry that when I worked in a school district I faced with regards to free and open source software and particularly Open Office, which was an excellent product and met the needs of like 95% of the people there and had a lot of interest by our technology coordinator and other people. But two problems that we faced with it were, one, all the curricular information, particularly with the high school business classes, were all Microsoft was just so entwined into that curricular resources. And on top of that, I'm not sure of what textbooks or curricular resources are available that are either devoid of any particular product, you know, not married to a single product, or focus on using Open Office in a way that teachers could teach it.
Yeah, the entwinement, and a lot of folks go one step further and say, well, if children don't learn Microsoft Office in high school, then they won't be prepared for college, or more specifically for, you know, quote, a job in the real world. Well, if your child graduates from high school and does it without the capacity to learn a slightly different office suite, then your child has, and the educational system has more problems than just that. And also, you know, who knows where things will be in 4 years. I mean, anything can happen in 4 years given, you know, the rise and fall of IBM and all these other companies. But, you know, and also if you have a high school business curriculum that has the explicit goal of bringing out Microsoft specialist certified people, then, and it's a, you know, a, that kind of program, then sure, go ahead. But just, you know, make it that you know you're getting that certification and don't try to extrapolate that to everybody. A really important thing, and again, I don't know how many curriculum really are that, and I'm going to use the word infested with Microsoft Office add-ons. It's really important to have leadership from the top, from the principals, from the people who are asking for the information from the admin and from the teachers If you don't have the higher-ups using OpenOffice, you're really going to have a lot of pushback. And all the other issues are just details. I've seen this in a lot of places.
You would think that the educational area, they want to teach the kids to use a word processor, a spreadsheet program, and not to be tied to one particular product and release. You look at Microsoft Office, the latest release, they changed the interface fairly dramatically.
Oh, yeah, I have a little story about that. But, yeah, well, the thing is there's no awareness that there is more than one. That so few people have ever heard of OpenOffice before I show up in the classroom, in the training room. So the idea of teaching just how to use a spreadsheet properly, how to construct a good document in some software, whether it be Google Docs, Writer, Word, WordPerfect, anything, isn't really there. The idea of plurality isn't there.
And that's a shame, too.
Yeah. One thing that, and I don't know because I haven't really been in these classes, but I don't think a lot of people really learn not how to use the software, but why and how they should use the software. I come across people who, when I teach them in the basic spreadsheet classes and I show them how to use the sum, occasionally they go, oh, I don't have to use my calculator anymore.
Wow.
Which is, clearly a lack in how we, use and teach people to use software in jobs. There's just this assumption that the background of, it's not about the software. It's about how and why you should put together documents correctly. You shouldn't indent things with spaces or tabs. You should indent them by, dragging the margin. You should put things in columns and tables. Don't drive yourself crazy with lots of tabs and carriage returns and looking like it's a typewriter. I think that is like this one big chunk that's missing. And if people were trained better just on that rather than which button to click for which process, it would be so much easier for anyone to switch virtually seamlessly between word processing applications, between spreadsheets.
It should be about the concepts and not about actually doing it. I mean, yeah, it's good that they know how to actually do things, but if they get the fundamental concepts behind it, then actually doing it should be second nature.
Right, exactly. I mean, sometimes I teach things like in the footer of your document, in the footer of your five-page document, you insert a page number field. You don't type the number because if you just type the number, it won't increment. You have to put in the field, just the idea of just how these things work. I mean, the point of using software in the first place is to use these cool things that aren't available to you if you were using a typewriter, but a lot of people never got the how it isn't a typewriter aspect, and I don't know how you do that a lot of companies, a lot of organizations need to realize that they need that, and you throw that in as your 1 or 2 day training along with welcome, here are your benefits and here's where the bathrooms are.
Well, let me ask you, as far as OpenOffice, what do you think is the number one reason why people look to switch to it? Is it just a purely cost saving thing?
Partly cost saving. One client has never had Microsoft Office on their premises because they started off with a flavor of Unix and WordPerfect, and they were not going to go to Windows as their internal operating system because Unix worked so much better. And so then they switched to Linux, and OpenOffice was the thing that worked with their their internal network. So part of it is the IT folks really don't want to use Windows. And OpenOffice went with that. Cost is a big thing too.
Have you looked at the latest release of Office, Microsoft Office? Have you tried that interface?
I looked for 5 minutes for the open command. Talked to somebody else who took 15 minutes to find print. And we're kind of power users. And we're like, ah, where is it? I heard about a school, and usually you hear about this happening with open office because it's not implemented correctly. I heard about a school district where they upgraded, quote, upgraded to Microsoft Office 2007. There was a huge outcry. Everybody hated it, and they forced a return to 2003. And I think that's absolutely to be expected because it seems like they tested the new version on only power users. And power users are entirely, entirely different, like monkeys in motor oil, from the more, you know, the 80-20, the 80% of just daily users who just want to pound out a document and don't care about
and I think ribbons. For most of those people, OpenOffice is perfect.
Yes, yeah. And you know, if the preview, like if you want to look under a different menu for preview, if you want to look under file menu instead of format menu for how to do page setup, OpenOffice is almost infinitely configurable. You can change around where the menu items are so easily. You can add it under the file menu if people are getting a little confused about where to do things. You can set up your keyboard shortcuts so that the intense spreadsheet people are happy. You can have any keyboard shortcuts you want. I mean, you can really take OpenOffice and just make it as familiar and easy for people as possible. There's the thing where you, in OpenOffice, where you press delete on a cell in the spreadsheet, and it pops up this window, what do you want to delete? Well, that's because delete is associated with that window, whereas backspace is the keyboard shortcut associated with just delete. All you need to do is flop those two, and nobody needs to even think about changing their habits.
So migrating from somebody who's coming from, say, like, you know, Office 98, Office 2000, you know, for them it's probably easier for them to migrate to OpenOffice than to go to Office 2007.
Oh, yeah. I just can't imagine. I'd like to be in the room where when people try to migrate, where just the average user who isn't, you know, a super geek uses Office 2007. I have some clients who, you know, some of the users say, oh, we just need to switch to Microsoft Office again, but they don't realize that it would have to be to Office 2007, and I'm not sure they've seen it.
You see, I come from IT in the financial industry, and mm-hmm. the only real users that I've seen that might need to stay with, say, Microsoft Excel, I know a lot of the financial analysts, sometimes they come up with these really, you know, complex formulas to do, you know, cost breakdown analysis and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's fairly complex. You know, for them, I can understand them to stay with, you know, Microsoft Office, but everybody else, you know, it's not that big of a deal. And, you know, whatever Microsoft charges these days, I don't know, $300 for, you know, a full copy of Microsoft Office.
I think it's at least $500 you can certainly pay $500 without trying too hard.
It's insane that, you know, what is the justification to pay that amount of money where you have, you know, free software that does everything you want it to. You know, it's compatible with the documents, with the formats and everything.
Oh, yeah, it's not about the software. And like you said, with the Excel users, I mean, maybe some of those formulas are too complicated, but if they're just using formulas, not macros, not, you know, add-on packages, I'd really like to see what they need done with just formulas that can't be done in OpenOffice.
You mentioned the add-on packages. That in itself is like a whole cottage industry that's crowded.
Well, Microsoft has done a really good job, and which other companies have not, of making things really good for partners who want to write on add-on stuff. Although OpenOffice does have a really great set of and growing set of extensions, not probably as powerful as those add-on packages, but on extensions.openoffice.org, I think, you got some lovely add-ons, including something that makes starting a document with no page number, but having page numbers on the additional pages a lot easier. So there are a few add-ons for OpenOffice.
And that's growing now a lot, especially with 3.0 and its plug-in features, isn't it? Or 2.0. I think the 2.x series had plugins also.
Yeah, it's like 2.3, I think, and up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, extensions.openoffice.org will get you to a place where you can go to the latest up-to-date ones, yeah.
Because I know I wanted to try out. Yeah, I wanted to try out the grammar extension, but it was only for version 3 and above.
Yeah, I've heard mixed on the grammar checker, but there's a nice little thing that lets you create a presentation just by pointing to a directory of graphics. There's a nice little one that lets you update straight to your Google or upload straight to your Google or Zoho Docs account. Just update or upload. Lots of nice little extensions. So we just gotta, you know, take some of those financial packages and just convert them over.
There you go.
Well, let me ask you, on most of the deployments that you've seen, is it mostly on Windows machines? Is it mostly on Unix and Linux?
I'm going to say roughly half and half. And there's no particular... I mean, they pretty much run how they run. Doesn't matter what operating system.
What about OS X? Have you experienced any of that?
I think it's going to be running natively in 3.0. And a lot of NeoOffice users are happy.
Because I know that prior to NeoOffice, had to run it in X11, and there was some integration issues between Aqua and X11. And then NeoOffice came out, and for a while it was pretty darn slow compared to that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I know it's come a long way. I haven't used it in a couple of years myself. But,
yeah, I'm not as familiar as I could be with the Mac end. I haven't actually seen... Yeah, nobody I train actually uses Mac as a significant operating system.
Huh.
But,
yeah, some of the other things that and particularly in the school districts, which you're not going to find this so much in the business, is with regards to the benefit I could see OpenOffice playing is the standardization. Because where I used to work, the juniors, and I think seniors too, might have had to do something, a smaller one. They had a graduation project they had to do, and they were encouraged to use what they would say PowerPoint, a presentation program.
Right.
And they set aside like 2 or 3 days out of the school year, and they would come in front of a team of teachers and do their presentation. And that was a nightmare for us because students would come in with presentations done on all different versions of PowerPoint you had students who were using Mac, using Keynote, and it was a nightmare. Then you had students who would do these extravagant multimedia presentations in PowerPoint that would just dog the systems.
Yeah, and some of the graphics were what 5 megs each, and
yeah, and
video and. PowerPoint is a road to many problems because the fancier equals the more problematic.
Yeah, and you know, just to be able to get this varied support was a nightmare. And you think if they would have just used something like OpenOffice, everybody could have had a copy. Everybody could have had a copy at home. It would have all been standardized.
Yes.
You know, in fact,
exactly.
Yeah, I even recall fixing PowerPoint. You know, when a PowerPoint program would crash and not work anymore, open it up in OpenOffice Presenter, and you'd start to fixing it.
Yes, yes, exactly. You're right on both those points. You don't have to pay to upgrade to the latest version, so you can make sure people have the latest version. And also, yeah, you can. I mean, if you have and I've seen this at least for Word files, if you have a corrupted Word file, it'll open in Word before it'll open up in Word. And it looks like the same thing is true for PowerPoint in some cases.
Yeah. I know where I work. I mean, the majority of us, even though we all have Microsoft Office, you know, everybody's using OpenOffice all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've got Microsoft Office provided to you, but people are using OpenOffice preferentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Everybody uses OpenOffice. I mean, our whole team uses it pretty much a lot of people on our team are using Linux too, so there's, you know, yep. have to dual boot. And the only problem I've ever had with interoperability between Office products and OpenOffice, Microsoft Office products and OpenOffice, has been with Publisher.
Oh, Publisher doesn't play with anybody.
No, Publisher doesn't
play with
itself.
You can't open it in Word, you can't open it in anything.
Yeah.
Well, Publisher is really just a set of very lovely templates. It's not really software so much as templates.
Now,
the only issues I've seen is with certain Word documents that are just like, you know, these horrible templates that have been hacked to no end that are like six versions old.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
My wife was getting a newsletter, and it was one of these things where it was passed along, you know, for like 10 years plus. Each person just, you know, changed the templates, the Microsoft Word templates, and it just never rendered right.
Right. Yeah, they do. Well, they do terrible, terrible things in those Word templates sometimes. I opened up one document in OpenOffice and all weird because all the text was running down the right side. They had created the template in the original in Word with the text all in a frame instead of just in the normal text flow of the document in a simple, elegant manner indented appropriately. So a lot of those templates are just bad to begin with. Just the design is bad. And then you put it along for 10 years with users of possibly varying skill level and indenting with tabs sometimes, and then, you open it up in OpenOffice, and that's really kind of, you know, God's way of telling you that the original document was a problem in the first place. So, and some people, you know, you've got a document that started off in Word perfect, and then it converted to Word, and then when it ends up in OpenOffice, yes, some of the bullets are going to be weird. But,
Let me ask you, one area I'm not really all that familiar with, you know, with OpenOffice is the scripting utilities that it has. I know at Microsoft, VBScript is just horrible. It's just a security risk, and it's just something you don't want to go get involved with, you know, programmatically speaking, even. It's a horrible thing. How does the scripting the scripting functionality in OpenOffice compare?
I'm going to have to tell you that I do not know because I don't go into the scripting place. I don't do scripting. I will tell you that I've done some, like I did some training once and someone asked me how to write macros, and I said, what do you want to do with this macro? And he said, well, I want to do one thing if one thing is true, but then I want to do something else if it's false. And I said, well, that sounds like the if function to me. And he said, oh, there's an if function, and that totally did what he needed to do. So that's kind of going to be my tangent, is that some people do things in Word and Word and Excel with macros that they just don't need to do in the first place. And so when you try to convert documents over, that's one thing that can simplify up, is that you can just not even worry about the macros and just do it in a simpler way. There's a 000forum.org is a site where they have lots of really good snippets and advice and information about writing macros in the macro language, but I can't really comment on it much myself.
Let me ask you, a real, you know, major issue, big can of worms was opened up with the whole open document format. And, you know, the big push for documents, especially in governments and in the public domain, to be as open as possible.
Yes.
I guess I probably know the answer that you're going to give, but I'm going to ask the question. Do most people even have a clue about this at all, what open document is?
No, some people still think that Microsoft Office is free and comes with their computer. So there isn't the concept of, a government, a society that requires its citizens to do certain things should not require it to spend $500 in order to simply, you know, read the lunch menu from their kids' school or to fill out a child support worksheet or whatever. I mean, you see all those child support worksheets out there that you can download in Excel. Well, they work in OpenOffice, thank goodness. Most of the time, there's all sorts of other documents that people have to fill out, and a lot of them are in Word, and that just, it bugs me. There was the, this is not OfficeSuite, but there was the example during Katrina, briefly on the, on some website where people could go for help. You could only get there using Internet Explorer.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. But no, the idea that that you should be able to get at your own data through any application. You shouldn't have to, you know, have vendor lock-in. You shouldn't have to rent, so to speak, your own data isn't something that's out there.
Yeah, and then Microsoft, you know, they had their own, you know, their own open XML format, and they it was a big push by them, you know, to win over the ISO standard and everything, and there was talk about corruption and payoffs in all the different countries, and there was a big brouhaha. It got you know, pushed through, you know, most of the countries, but then you hear about Microsoft backing off of that and saying they're going to have an implementation of open document format in their next release, which is kind of, you know, an about face, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, well, I remember the Microsoft version of Java that I believe
C-sharp?
No, they had this whole...
I know.
Stuff. Yeah.
J++ like, is what you're referring to.
Well, it was the kind of like the frog that wants to get the ride over the river on the scorpion or something like that. And it's like, well, no, it's just kind of... that version of Java didn't quite work the way it should.
Yeah, well, basically, you know, for people who don't know, basically, Microsoft licensed Java from Sun back in the 90s, and they came out with their own implementation called J++, and they started adding their own classes to their version, and it got to the point where applications written for J++ were not compatible with vanilla Sun Java. So it was the classic, you know, embrace, extend, extinguish, you know,
exactly,
mantra that Microsoft was guilty of for a long time.
Solveig, yeah, are you familiar with J++?
Not really.
See, don't listen to Pat. He's lying to you, because Microsoft came out with an improved version of Java called J++, and it was so much better than Sun's Java that Sun purposefully broke their Java so it wouldn't work properly with Microsoft, and thus stifled innovation in the community once again.
Yes, there was a big lawsuit, and I believe Sun won, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, I worked for Sun during the lawsuit, so that's my where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah, and then Sun released, Microsoft released the C# and the whole .NET framework, and that's a whole other discussion for another, you know.
Another superior technology, right, Pat?
Right.
Solveig, what version of OpenOffice did you start teaching with?
Started teaching, let's see, that would have been February 2003, so I guess it was, OpenOffice 1.0.
So you didn't do any teaching of StarOffice prior to that, did you?
No.
Do you remember?
I didn't, yeah.
You remember that version 5 and earlier of StarOffice with that interface they had that took over the entire desktop. It was like StarOffice desktop.
Yeah, and I can kind of see how some people might think that was good, because, you know, still, you know, people think of people, when I come to teach an office suite, people ask me email questions, and so there's this kind of illusion that it should all be together. But yeah, I started writing the book for 5.2 on 5.1 and then upgraded to 5.2, and it wasn't as ready for prime time as it could have been. And a little bit weird.
Now, we often talk, you know, and discuss about teaching the differences between OpenOffice, Microsoft Office, and some other flavors of word processors like WordPerfect and everything. But what about StarOffice and OpenOffice? I mean, what are the
currently
big differences between them?
Currently, nothing.
Oh.
There's a Google button on the StarOffice version. and I think a different spell checker, and you get the Adabas database with it. But and there's an interface change here and there, but really I think, and you know, I haven't absolutely double dog checked recently, but I think there's more differences between the IBM version of OpenOffice and, you know, classic OpenOffice than there is between StarOffice and OpenOffice. And likewise with the, there's dramatic differences with the Novell and OpenOffice and regular OpenOffice are kind of close. IBM OpenOffice and regular OpenOffice are quite different, although IBM's done some really nice things with the interface on their version.
Before we get to those, because I'm interested in that, a couple questions about that. Isn't the Adabas database... Aren't you able to download that and integrate that with OpenOffice?
Yeah, it's part of the install. I'm not enough of a database person to really go anywhere with that, but the just the base capabilities in OpenOffice 2 and higher are certainly very respectable. Not probably, I'm guessing not as big as, say, something you could get from MySQL or whatever, but...
Okay, so then as a trainer, as a person who would go in and teach OpenOffice, from the perspective that one of the things, you know, that is a barrier to entry for OpenOffice is you're changing an application and you're changing what people are familiar with. So you're training on OpenOffice and now you have to contend with Novell and IBM having a different OpenOffice than what is the normal version of OpenOffice available from OpenOffice.org. Do you see that as a problem in diluting the product?
I've only trained like one client on the Novell version, and I haven't seen anyone using Symfony IBM's version yet. It's also based on the 1.x code base, I believe. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's I say, okay, you should choose this and this, and the students say, we don't have that. And I say, what? And I look at their screens, and I say, oh, you should choose this instead. So far, really, it hasn't been an issue because pretty much people are using StarOffice or OpenOffice Classic. And like I said, I mean, if you have the Novell version, which you've gotten because you're using, you know, other of their products or whatever, you can certainly easily do customization to add things to make these. It's a little bit more like OpenOffice if you want, and then just copy that those config files throughout the system. So in short, or in long, it hasn't been that much of a problem.
Oh, I hope it continues that way.
Pardon?
I said I hope it continues that way so we don't get a dilution or confusion of the product.
Right, right. I think overall Novell has more, like the changes are kind of, in the guts, they try to address some conversion issues. I believe they could try to make the macros convert from Microsoft Office. And I think the last time I looked at it, the changes were mostly like additional stuff rather than actual differences, like changing the OpenOffice Classic stuff.
You know, I think one of the most outstanding features that OpenOffice was probably first to come to the table with was easy PDF export and even Flash.
I thought you were going to say that.
Flash, yeah. Creation with presentations and stuff. And I mean, that's got to be a big hit.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, how do you make it? I mean, well, first, I mean, a lot of folks, I explain what PDF is when I go into the classroom, and then I explain that what it means to them is they can always send out their documents and not worry about which fonts other people have, which versions of Microsoft Office other people have. They can just always count on their documents looking right. And, you know, conversion problems between documents did not start with the introduction of OpenOffice. I mean, between different versions of Word and fonts and everything, that's always been an issue. So that reassurance that goes over very well in the classroom. And then there's that really nice feature where you just choose File, Send, Document as PDF. Starts your email, gets a PDF copy, attaches it to your new email document, in like 2 seconds. Really nice. I get actual audible ooze when I demonstrate that.
It is a killer feature.
Yep, yep. And plus, you can export if you create a fill-in form with the fields like the radio buttons, drop-down lists, and everything that you get when you choose tools, view toolbars, form controls. Those export to PDF, and you can still fill in the fields. You can still use the drop-down lists. You can still select checkboxes and do radio buttons. You can create downloadable fill-in forms. You can't save them, but that's very common that you can't save it. You can just fill it in, print it out. So that's great for like schools or cities where you need to fill in forms to apply for a, you know, a stove or a heater or something like that, or ask for something from the city. Cities can easily just create these documents that people can download with Adobe Reader and fill them in. So that's a huge plus. All for free.
And I'm assuming that PDF creation is allowable, that you don't have to pay royalties to Adobe, because it's... is it a published standard now that's open?
I think, I believe so. I was talking to somebody who just said that it was officially adopted as the standard for portable documents, and I was like, what, just now? But apparently it was like really, really, really officially adopted as a portable document standard.
Now, I am not at all up on the latest versions of Microsoft's Office. But are they supporting PDF export now? Because I know they were trying to push a different format. It started with an M or something a couple years ago.
I do not know for sure, but I feel like I would have heard about it if they had built-in PDF creation. I think they have add-on PDF creation, but...
I have a question, Solway. What's the biggest difference between, you know, vanilla OpenOffice and StarOffice? What do you get extra with the paid version?
The name Sun behind it, so that when you take it to your VP, they don't go, ugh, open source. They go, oh, Sun's behind it. Okay, I feel comfortable.
That's it.
I believe so, but I believe if you are a big enough company, Sun will scramble to help you out with little fixes and stuff. That would be my guess also. People, just big companies, are nervous with open source, I believe.
You know, that's a very good point, and I've encountered some of that myself. It seems in certain industries, they're very conservative, and a lot of times their legal departments, you know, want to know, who do we sue if something goes wrong, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of sad that that's the way they run their business.
Yeah, and, yeah.
You know, some places would rather spend the money just so that, you know, they say, okay, this is somebody we can go back to. And they never wind up actually going back to them for anything.
Right. And that's just sad that people have to keep that much, have to offset that much amount of money for the risk of being sued. When I start my own country, when, like, part of, I don't know, Northern Canada frees up for me or something like that, I'm going to put that into the Constitution, but you just can't sue as much because it's just stupid.
Ah, here you go, Solveig. It's now called XML Paper Specification, but it was formerly codenamed Metro.
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 That's their Microsoft's PDF killer,
yes.
So they say.
Yes, XML-based specification.
PDF killer, right.
And okay. That's the only thing holding me back from going to OpenOffice completely, is support for Metro.
Yeah, PDF is now a verb. I'm not sure if anything, however snazzily named.
Yeah, so OpenOffice has been... What is your favorite component of OpenOffice? I mean, which do you like the best? Is it the presenter?
I love Draw.
Yeah?
Now, I'm a unskilled but enthusiastic graphic artist, is the best way to put it. I love noodling around with Draw. Nobody knows it's there. I demo it whenever possible. It's a good way to make people enthusiastic about it, because when there's built-in 3D objects where you can draw like the cone, and you can take the donut-shaped thing, and you can take the donut-shaped thing and actually put it over the cone, so the cone pops through the donut, like kind of like a cloud on a mountain. It's uh-huh. very cool looking. I've probably actually used it in graphics. I've created like a bowl of fruit. Kind of still life-looking thing with the 3D things, with the apple and the banana thing inside the bowl. That's really cool stuff. There are connector lines in Draw so that you have, you know, Visio-like capabilities. If you're not doing anything really, really intense with Visio, then with Draw you've got the connector lines, and with the gallery you can pop in a bunch of clip art if you need, you know, your picture of the server and your picture of the clients and stuff like that. Take your connector lines, draw them together, and you got a nice network diagram. And there's just a few slightly Photoshop type things. You can take a photo and apply a charcoal drawing effect to it. You can make it grayscale and then put in like 50% red and 30% blue and have some interesting effects. It's a lot of really fun things to do. I use it for all my book covers whenever possible.
I guess the big thing with OpenOffice is not enough people know it's out there.
Oh, yeah. It's how many years later, and it used to be when I went to parties or whatever, people would say, what? And now there's usually one person there who I end up talking to in the corner about it and giving them tips. But yeah, I just would have thought, and my dream is to somehow get Oprah's attention and, you know, the whole cross the digital divide, software for everybody, you know, maybe software for that school she's running in Africa, whatever, and just get her to give away OpenOffice for everybody, give them a CD under their chair at the end of some show. If we can just get Oprah, then everybody will know about it.
Or somebody
on that level.
You know, I've never heard anybody say that before, and that is a darn good idea.
See, just got to find somebody who knows Oprah. Maybe Dean Haglund knows Oprah.
Maybe. but that's the ticket right there. If you get it on Oprah, man, holy mackerel. That would be.
If she can do it for books, yeah.
I think Oprah's
Software Club. That's it, Oprah's Software Club.
There you go.
I think a real way to really nip it in the bud is to get the OEMs on board. You know, if some of them like Dell put OpenOffice on their machines, you know, all operating mm-hmm. systems, I think it would open up, you know, a lot of eyes to it, more so than now. And instead of you know, that Microsoft Work stuff that they throw on.
I know.
It's horrible.
Yeah. But I'm sure somebody would become annoyed.
But if you got OpenOffice on Oprah, I am sure within a month it would be showing up in advertisements and on Dell and everything for a little while after, you know, it made that brouhaha on Oprah, because people would
Justin
would
Timberlake
that.
Would be associated with it somehow.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So all you listeners, if you've got a cousin who babysits for Oprah, or, well, probably not babysits, but something, let's get the word out. That would be great. Yeah, I have a blog like from 2 years ago where I said, okay, my fantasy is this to get OpenOffice out. The key thing is get it on Oprah. Because it seems like it would, you know, sync with some of her goals at least.
That's a good idea. So you've written a bunch of books here that we're looking at, and OpenOffice.org.
Yeah, I think it's the fourth one now.
What is the title of the fourth book?
The current one is the guidebook, and the title keeps changing because, well, I just think that the latest one is better.
The OpenOffice.org 2 guidebook?
Yep, that's the one that I self-published that Pearson decided wasn't enough of a risk to do a print version. So I said, fine, give me back the rights, and I'll publish it myself, and I sell it on Amazon, and it works out pretty well.
Now, did you write that in OpenOffice?
I must divulge that I did not. I wrote the first version in FrameMaker because 5.2 was not really ready for prime time. There was a bit of a crashing issue. And neither Word nor Writer is really a tool for big books.
Uh-huh.
Writer still has an issue where if you do a level 2 or below running footer, then it doesn't show the current footer all the time because of blah, blah, blah. Conditional text is something else I need that OpenOffice was sticky on for a few versions. And, well, I already had FrameMaker, so it's FrameMaker is a beautiful, wonderful book tool. It's not an Office Suite tool, but it's a good book tool.
So what are the formats that publishers usually look for their manuscripts?
Just camera-ready PDF is what I always gave because I was a tech writer and they knew I knew how to do it. But some folks, I mean, some people submit HTML, and then, like, for a while I was freelancing, and so I would take HTML and slap it into FrameMaker. Or people would take Word, and I would edit it in OpenOffice and give it back to them, and that worked out fine, and then we created a camera-ready PDF out of that. FrameMaker is definitely still used as a preferred final format for a lot of publishers.
Is FrameMaker Adobe's product that's comparable to Quark?
Yes, but a little more targeted toward long books.
Oh, okay. Now, is there any equivalent on the free and open source software side to FrameMaker or Quark that you are aware of or familiar with?
Not really. Some people talk about Scribus, but really that's just layout. So I don't think so. FrameMaker is really, I mean, I was a tech writer for a long time, and FrameMaker is, by and large, the choice for tech writers. I would used to screen out jobs anytime they'd advertise that I had to use Word instead of FrameMaker.
That's what we need, is FrameMaker ported to Linux, too.
It was on Linux. I'm not sure how much it supported these days.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, that's what we used at Sun all the time for. That's what I wrote the Star Office 5.2 book in. It was FrameMaker on Linux, on Solaris.
You ran Linux on... Oh, wait.
FrameMaker on Solaris?
Now, was that running on Solaris, or was it running on Linux? Or was it running under
Solaris,
Linux compatibility?
Yeah.
Under so it
Solaris,
was,
yeah.
So it wasn't on Linux, it was on Solaris.
Right. Yeah, it was... 99 and 2000, yep.
I wonder if they still produce that for Solaris. Oh, well.
I think there was rumors of a FrameMaker for Linux at one point, and then they never went to beta, but never any farther, I think. FrameMaker 7.1 on Unix now uses PDF lib and no longer relies on Distiller, is something that came up when I Googled.
Oh, yep. Something to look into.
Yep, FrameMaker 7.2 Unix Solaris. Yep.
We need one of those for Linux.
Yeah. Adobe people, please, are you listening?
So, are you still? Do you use Solaris in your day-to-day activity, or what's your primary operating system?
My primary is I have to deal with Vista, which just sucks in so many ways, and I have also an XT machine. I also try things out on Ubuntu, and but I work in Windows primarily because that's what my Photoshop and FrameMaker run on.
So now you have to use Vista because you train on Vista, or?
Well, because I was too whatever to figure out getting my laptop redone with XP.
Now, when you do your trainings, I mean, are you primarily an OpenOffice trainer, or do you train on other products too?
The only thing I train on is OpenOffice.
Oh.
But I can make my Windows laptop look like it is Ubuntu by simply downloading the Ubuntu icons zip file and flipping it over in the configuration. So I can run Windows but have the icons be appropriate for my students very easily. And then sometimes I'll just use the Linux box right there in the training room.
That's cool.
When I go on site.
Now, aside from being a trainer, do you work at all with the OpenOffice.org community?
For a while, I was doing more answering on the users at OpenOffice.org list than I do now. I guess I do it less because I blog and provide just info to the world at large through my blog, openoffice.blogs.com. I'm working with the OpenOffice community on the certification initiative. So I'm hoping that's something that I think is really important that I look forward to achieving great things with.
Awesome.
So, Solway, one of the guys in our IRC is saying, try Ubuntu with VirtualBox for running XP and Vista. They're recommending that you run Vista and XP instead of a virtual machine.
I'm sorry, recommend with virtual...
VirtualBox. VirtualBox is virtualization software.
Okay.
So you can have your system running Ubuntu or any Linux flavor or whatever, and then you can install, you know, Windows XP, Vista, you know, whatever OS you'd like inside the virtual machine. Just passing that along.
On the pro Ubuntu side, I will say that, excuse me, when my Windows machine crashes and cannot reboot at all, and the only way to get back it running is to restore from the original disks, which of course formats the hard drive, all I do is slip in an Ubuntu Live CD, mount the disk drive, and then I can just copy all the files off onto my iPod, actually.
Yeah,
I did that more than once before I got my backups better. But yeah, the Ubuntu Live CD saved me big time.
I'm a software developer, and a lot of times I need to test deploying software on different platforms. And I mostly run Linux. You know, it's my OS of choice. And I do have VirtualBox running, and inside my VirtualBox machine, I have a Windows XP install in there. And honestly, that's the safest, best place to run any Windows software because it's inside of a virtual machine from a security standpoint. And then another nice thing is you can create a backup image once you have the image tweaked and set up the way you want it to. You create a backup of the image, and if something happens where the image gets corrupted or something gets messed up, you could just roll back to the old image. You know, no problem.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's the best place for a legacy OS instead of a virtual machine.
Yep. Very good.
So let me ask you, what are some of the bigger deployments have you seen of OpenOffice going out and teaching?
Let's see. I think I have to not divulge the name of the company, but there's a ginormous company. Like, if they go with Star Office, everybody will totally change their tune evaluating Star Office. Biggest installation... Pardon?
How many seats?
How many states?
Seats? How many seats?
Oh.
How many installs?
Billions and billions. I mean, like, I'm not sure I can count that high. They're a really big company.
Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands?
Big. excuse me. As far as companies that I've seen, I think, I talked to a company and they were looking at maybe 5,000 seats eventually with all their sites. of course, we all know about the debacle that Microsoft did with the state of Massachusetts. I've also read about the, and I don't know actually where this went, but the, France government was looking at doing OpenOffice, and that would have been about 80,000 seats. That was a couple years ago, and I think they had started. I'm not sure where they were going, though. There is.
Yeah, I know the National Police converted to Linux. I know that much.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it seems that there is a level of awareness these days with governments, more so in Europe than I think than over here in the States.
Where, oh, yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of, you know, you have documentation that's you know, public, for the public, you know, it should be on an open format that's not beholden to any one, you know, vendor.
And perhaps European countries have a bigger sense of don't give Uncle Bill any more money because he's not only different company, but different country. I guess maybe the whole is the biggest implementation of open office.
Yeah.
Using it.
Yeah. And IBM seems to be pushing that way too now. You know, like they're going with the...
Symphony.
Yeah, I've looked at it, and honestly, it just seems to be like an old version, you know. The interface is different.
Nice things where there's like these little palettes instead of having to go under format cell. There's just a little palette floating there with all the same things.
The interface is a little more simpler, I think.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. You know, but it's out there. People can try it out, you know. You know, the whole thing with ODF is that, you know, the idea is, you know, you have all different software applications using this format. You're not tied to any one application, any one platform.
Yep. I'm just going to go off onto my own topic, which is very important, and that is that anyone looking at transitioning to open office has to really, really plan it ahead of time. Because there's so many things you don't know. Rumsfeld, I believe, had that comment about the unknown unknowns, which everybody mocked him for, but was really, you know, that's exactly what it is. It's the unknown unknowns. And, I mean, after having the powers that be, the people that write the checks, the people with the power on your side, you have to plan and you have to do a beta or a pilot. You have to go around and just check how things are going to work. You have to give your power users your 10 or your 100, your 1% or whatever, open office to check on things, how things are going to be. You have to let people know it's coming, and you have to show them that it's not scary. So many people come into my class, and they look at it, and after, you know, the first hour when I show them how to make bold and italic and just, you know, start things very slow, they go, it's just like Microsoft Office. And I say, yeah. But there was this, all this resistance, all this fear of this weird, you know, free thing that was just going to totally mess up everything for people. And you can avoid that so much if you just give it a nice, slow, and with lots of demos, lots of lunch and learns, find out the people who are going to complain the most, try to get them on your side. Something else that happens, like IT director goes off, sees open office, gets all excited, comes back, installs it on all the machines over the weekend. And that can be shocking for people. But also, if you just do that and you don't, like, even set the file associations correctly, so when people double-click .doc, Word isn't there anymore and you haven't associated OpenOffice with .doc yet, then none of the files open. People think their files are broken. People think their data is ruined. They blame OpenOffice. And it's people panic.
Leaves a bad impression.
Oh, horrible. If you have something wrong, go wrong with the new thing that nobody knew about, that nobody wanted to do in the first place. It's just, bam, that's it. You're done.
So I guess a good idea is to have like a beta testing group where, you know, you have a small subset of the company, you know, use it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Start with your power users, then go to a scatter select group of the average users. And seriously, like you were talking about those templates that have been around for 10 years and the documents are just wacky. Farm out the conversion of the crazy documents, the 1%, the 10% of documents that people actually do need to convert. They don't just need to keep them in, you know, old PDF or paper form. Farm it out, excuse me, because the problems that you encounter in these old documents could be anything. And, you know, I don't care if you pay me to do it or you pay someone else to do it or you find a talented intern to do it, but don't make people do it because they're going to be scrambling enough trying to have a good attitude and trying to learn the new software without trying to figure out that, oh, there are 15 hidden sections in this document. Your average user isn't going to be able to want to have the time to figure that out. So any problem document, don't make people deal with them. And after that, tell them when you're going to switch. give them all the tools they need to switch, and then make them switch and take OpenOffice or take Microsoft Office off. Give them the tough love, because I'm speaking for myself. People do what they have to. And if they have to switch, then they will use it, and then they'll remember all the things we taught them, and then they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is okay. The mail merge works better in OpenOffice. Oh, yeah. Well, it'll work. It just really needs good planning.
Let me ask you a question, Solveig, and when you're doing your trainings. Now, I had the privilege of working with a vast array of people at different skill levels, and I noticed a significant portion of them never had any formal training on any kind of Office product, a software product, let alone Microsoft Office. And, you know, you get the thing where they want to show you a picture or something, so they go, instead of going to, like, where the picture is and double-clicking on it, they'll go open up Microsoft's Office, go into Word, do file open, and go through all these things. So, you know, having no official training on these products, people find ways to do what they normally do through the most bizarre and, for them, logical, yes. But for other people, illogical ways. Do you ever get people coming up
Byzantine,
to you?
Yes.
Yeah, Byzantine. You ever get people coming up to you saying, wow, you know, I didn't know it would be this much easier to do X, Y, and Z than when I do it in Microsoft or, to that flavor?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of things, although the only things I can think of examples of are just like people scrolling through really, really long windows, going screen by screen, you know, through the window, and I show them that they can just type like S and go straight to the S's, and that's helpful to them, and they didn't know about that before. That can help their productivity. But, yeah, there's so many things that people just go through that they really don't have to, that make any application just a lot tougher. And I think, that's one reason that people cling to Microsoft Office is they've gone through all the pain and all the Byzantine ways to do stuff, and they're not about to have to do what they think is learning a whole bunch of other, you know, pretzel, twisty, kill a chicken kind of ways to do things, when in fact they don't have to kill a chicken in either application. But that's part of the fear, is because they never had the proper... Oh, you just go to your file manager and double-click. Yeah.
So could you give us an idea of what has your experience been with the follow-up then after these companies have trained on it? Have people been, are they still using OpenOffice? Are they happily using it? Have some of them gone back to a Microsoft Office or, What has been your experience on that end?
This goes directly back to support from the higher-ups, because people complain. They just always do, because change is hard. And if they get any kind of, let's just say sympathy from the VPs, from the city managers, whatever, then that helps them dig in their heels. If they don't see the city managers using OpenOffice, then they think, well, why do I have to? Or, the principal or the VP or whatever. So when I go back to clients and there are still the same problems and there's still the same resistance, it's because of the lack of support. I went back to one client in the last 6 months, and I noticed a remarkable change in both attitude and skill, and it was because the second in command was using OpenOffice. They hired somebody new, she was using OpenOffice, and bam. That's huge.
A support structure is definitely key.
Well, the I have to use this is key. That the clear message that you have to use this is key, and then, people feel like two things. A, they have to use it, and B, if it's endorsed by that person with authority, then that kind of takes off the whole it's free, it can't be good thing, and gives it if they're using it, maybe it is a real product. And then, then they forget about the resistance to change and the frustration with, the process of having to learn a few new things. and then they can just get down to work and, you know, work with the training and make sure they get their problem solved and just get going.
So we often talk about, you know, Open Office being a contender to Microsoft Office. What's your feeling on some of the newer Office suites like Apple's iWrite or whatever it is, and their Keynote product?
Boy, I'm out of the loop on that. I'm sorry. I think Google Docs will never take over, but it is a convenient tool for traveling.
What you need to do is you need to go spend some more time in your local Apple store with an Apple genius who can set you up.
Clearly.
No, you
clearly.
Don't. No, you don't.
Well, all my coolest friends have Macs. How about that?
Yeah. I was just being facetious there anyway. So you don't think Google Docs is the future? You know, word processing in
the
cloud?
It's the future of something, but not of what we do with... It's not the future of the spreadsheets that your buddies with the that those folks with the really intense calculations are doing.
That's too bad, huh? Well, OpenOffice has a plugin to integrate with Google Docs. You had mentioned, correct?
Yep. So you can, yeah, I have a few documents that I just need to have always kind of updated, and I travel and stuff, so I periodically update them to my Google Docs account, and there it is. Very convenient.
You know, speaking of that, I have never tried this, but I have heard that running OpenOffice in a a thin client setting is very efficient, that you can run multiple instances of OpenOffice off of, say, a server to a client, and it is very efficient in
it is memory. Blindingly fast. Get yourself a good Linux setup, and one of my clients, I think they run like, I'm not sure, but at least 700 users of OpenOffice off the same server. And here you're getting into, you know, I'm kind of out of my league here, but yeah, I've seen some amazing stuff with really old hardware. And that leads to another reason to use OpenOffice, is you don't have to upgrade your hardware every, you know, X years, where X is a small single digit. You can do some amazing stuff with the proper Linux setup. I've seen it start in under 2 seconds.
So that is that more efficient than Microsoft Office running in a thin client setting? Running a Microsoft Office off a server like that?
I have no knowledge of that.
I don't even know if you can do that with Microsoft Office.
I was kind of thinking, this is one of those sarcastic questions, isn't it? But I thought I'll just answer straight and then see what they say.
I don't think you can. Or maybe I'm wrong. Somebody will prove me wrong. And that'll be it.
Yeah.
When is OpenOffice 3 supposed to hit, or has it hit already?
It's supposed to be in the fall, and they are always, my experience is that they're never all that specific, which is probably good for software release, because then you don't have that whole, what do you got, features, quality, or timeline thing.
Uh-huh. So I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
I could probably run a beta right now, but I'm too lazy.
Well, on the 24th, I'm going to be doing a little class for a client on 3.0, so either the beta or the regular one.
Oh, wow. I wonder if they're going to have it out before the new version of Ubuntu comes out. Yeah, it probably won't ship with Ubuntu anyhow. Not until next year.
Sure.
Wow. So how many trainings do you do? I mean, what, like, are you doing per month? I mean...
Varies a lot. I've been traveling a lot this summer. Seems like summer and like the January, February times are really busy. But yeah, sometimes I'm out there 3 or 4 times a month. I have one client I just go to on stay for a week, 5 minutes there for a day. I was out in Seattle doing a couple. And then some folks I just do some consulting for, some folks I do like a 3-hour training for every month or two, just on whatever topics you need. The other day I was going to do a whole big 3-hour training, carefully planned out, and it turned out they didn't want the topics that we planned, but they just asked me questions one after another. How do you do this? How do you do that? That worked out great. I've been experimenting with DimDim. Apparently it was a little choppy on the other side for the folks running Linux, but it's free, and it works.
What is that?
DimDim.
What is that?
It's like WebEx, but free and
oh, yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah. There's Zoho Meeting, there's Spreed, there's DimDim. I'm sure there's a few others.
Huh. I'll have to look into that. Never tried those. They work pretty well? You said it was a little choppy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little slow. It's not quite as smooth as my experience with GoToMeeting or WebEx, but, you know, GoToMeeting is Windows only and at least $50 a month, and WebEx is more. And there's also ReadyTalk, too, that supports Linux clients for a fee.
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to look into those.
Yeah, but it's nice. I mean, if somebody writes to me and says, I will pay you to help me figure this out, then I just start up a DimDim session, send them an invite, and I can make them the presenter. Well, only Windows people can present, at least, but between the two of us, I can show them what to do. They can show me what their problem is and stuff.
Do you ever get sick of using OpenOffice?
No.
Really?
I don't understand this question.
I was just kidding. You're training in it all the time. You're just like, I can't. I no more. No more writer.
Oh, no. I use it. I write my dad letters in it every day. I dabble with draw whenever I have a free moment. Well, not quite. So no, it's lovely, and
You're very well versed in it. Obviously, you probably know OpenOffice spectacularly well. How often do you find something new in an OpenOffice, or are you surprised by like, wow, I didn't know that?
It feels like I was underutilizing the regular expressions in filters. You can use all sorts of the standard regular expressions in filters. You know, you can't. It goes beyond just looking for, you know, all the last names that start with B. You can really make it dance if you're a regular expression user. And I'd forgotten about that. I used to come across things more, but after 6 years, it takes a little bit to surprise me. I've been totally forgetting about the file new file wizards, letter wizards that you can do to create letter templates, but I'm not sure how useful those are.
What about Easter eggs? Are there a lot of Easter eggs in OpenOffice that you're aware of?
Well, there's the one in Calc where if you type Star Wars or something, it'll start a little game.
Like Space Invaders, I think it was, wasn't it?
It's the phrase Star Wars is involved.
Yeah, but isn't it like a version of Space Invaders?
Oh, yeah, it could well be, yeah. Once I discovered that it was a video game, I was like, yeah, whatever.
But that's the fun stuff.
Yes, well, that's why you're an engineer and I'm not.
That's awesome. OpenOffice is pretty awesome. Yeah.
There are, I mean, speaking of just, you know, Easter eggs combined with things, discovering things, insert, menu, and then field, and then other in Writer, oh, that's just Candyland. You got conditional fields, you got variables, you got all sorts of stuff, and it's a little bit like, I don't know, it's more like you have a whole bunch of tools, and you're not quite sure what you can do with them until you start fiddling, rather than this is the feature for doing X, this is the feature for doing Y. It's more of a roll your own, living in the, you know, on 160 acres in Wyoming kind of a window where you can, you know, do a lot of stuff. You just got to figure out, but there's a lot of power in there. There's a whole, I mean, the numbering, list numbering in OpenOffice is far more reliable, far less twitchy, you know, in OpenOffice Writer than it is in Word. But there's another way you can do numbering in Writer using insert fields other that's just rock solid, fabulous, and it's actually a little bit more like FrameMaker's numbering.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah.
So any like...
So how does one get in contact with you, Solway, if we want to hire you to come teach at our business place?
info@getopenoffice.org or ultimately training@getopenoffice.org. Pretty much anything logical at getopenoffice.org.
So then is your website training or openoffice.org/training or training.openoffice.org?
My business website where you can see my training is just getopenoffice.org, and then there's various links. Also my blog, openoffice.blogs.com, has a link to that, and also a variety of things like links to free fonts and clip art and articles on transitioning and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for coming on our show and talking to us about this. And I hope that, you know, people who are in businesses that are interested in exploring open office and have heard this get in touch with you or pass the information on to people who would be responsible for this. Some really great stuff, and keep doing a great job.
Thank you so much. This has been a fun hour or so.
And, you know, you're more than welcome to stay on. We're going to move on to other topics. If you need to go, that's fine, too. So it's up to you, but thank you again.
Sure, thanks so much.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Good night.
And, Pat, you obviously wanted to bring something up today.
Well, besides on the topic of Microsoft, one topic I wanted to ask you, it came out actually after last week's episode, was the big $300 million marketing campaign that Microsoft is doing with Jerry Seinfeld. Did you see that commercial, Dan?
Yes.
I've seen that.
Oh, you saw it too, Solvay?
What did you think?
Yeah, what did you think?
I thought, well, they're trying for mass appeal. I didn't really follow it. I just saw that it was him. I'm not sure having Bill Gates in the ad is maybe all that effective, but...
See, I don't know how effective it is having, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, this, you know, 50-something-year-old, you know, white guy, you know, who's been off of TV for the last 10 years. I mean, yeah, his shows and reruns, you can see them, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning on whatever channel, but... I don't think it
connects.
Familiar,
non-threatening, not cutting edge. That's the message, which might be what they wanted.
Well, the other thing was they never actually, you know, mentioned much technology in it. They really didn't say much.
You know, I liked...
Yeah, they aren't really touching the Apple ads.
I liked the commercial. I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was a good commercial for Windows or Microsoft's products. I just thought, you know, as a nice little comical snippet with icons of the 20th and 21st century, I guess, you know, Bill Gates, Jerry Seinfeld in a commercial together. I thought it was a little, you know, it gave me a chuckle. I showed it to my wife, and when she was done watching it, she's like, huh? Like, if you're a fan of Seinfeld and you appreciate the humor about nothing, I think the commercial will appeal to you. But as a marketing tool for Vista, or it's for Vista, isn't it? Isn't it supposed to?
I don't know. I just saw it and I wasn't really. I don't think I could hear it very well. But I would just like to say that Bill Gates has a face for radio.
You know, what's interesting was the commercial was, you know, during an NFL game. It was the New York Giants versus the Washington Redskins game. And I just thought that was like an interesting demographic they were trying to appeal to.
Yeah, the whole guy thing, and clearly not the 18 to 30-year-olds. So.
I don't know.
Yeah. All I know is I tried to load, I tried to use my semi-current scanner printer with Vista, and it blew the whole box, and I had to restore from backup.
Did it really?
Well, CDs, yeah. It blew Vista.
What kind of scanner was it?
It's just a HP OfficeJet all-in-one, you know, the four-way kind of thing. It worked with the printer fine, just couldn't handle the scanner, and let me know.
Probably works.
So I used that live CD approach pretty, yeah, like twice in 1 month.
Was it certified to work with Vista?
Oh, I didn't know. I don't know, but I thought, well, didn't even check, actually. I was just too pissed.
Wow. That's
I should check, though. I should check to see if it was. Because you'd think if the printer worked, the scanner would have worked.
And it allowed you to even install the software and still blew up?
Well, it just, I hooked it up with the USB and I tried to add it and it jacked on me.
Oh, wait, you didn't even, so you just plugged this scanner into your computer and it blew up?
Well, it worked when I tried to, when I added the printer, it just kind of did it automatically in its own kind of normal, okay, you have a printer now, kind of way.
So you know, the scanner said, okay, you have a brick now.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Did you get a pretty green screen, or was it a blue screen?
I don't remember. I think it was something I'd never seen before, and it came up enough for me to, like, kind of get a backup off of it, actually come to think of it, and then when I restarted, it was, like, wanted me to press F1 or, you know, F1, F10, or F12.
Boy, I bet you that was a fun day for you, huh?
Oh, yeah, November was a fun month in general. One then the other.
Have you seen the Mojave commercials? Have you guys seen those?
No.
That's the one where they get a version of Vista and they tweak it out and then they tell people it's something new they're working on. And then the whole point of the ad was, you know, Vista is actually really good if people don't realize that it's actually Vista.
Really?
I have a guy I work with who likes to point out that essentially what Microsoft is doing there is calling their users stupid and insulting their intelligence by tricking them into using their operating system. And if you actually watch, if you go to the Mojave Experiment website and you actually watch some of these, and I've seen a bunch of them, that the people don't actually use the computer. They watch a trained professional.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
show them things as opposed to allowing them to do things. So, you know, that's
kind of weak.
Yeah, that's...
Interestingly, a lot of people like OpenOffice a whole lot better when they realize it's OpenOffice, but they're actually using it. Like a guy put a comment on my blog that he, quote, upgraded his whole team and told them it was just a new version, didn't tell them it wasn't Microsoft Office anymore, and he got very few complaints.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna ask you about whether anybody had ever done something like that, like just,
Switch the icon link so that when they click on the Microsoft Office icon, OpenOffice actually starts up?
Well, I mean, in my hometown, I mean, semi-hometown, Northwest Montana library, they use userful Linux install at the library, at the public, you know, things, and I don't think there's a lot of hot Linux action going on there, but people are just peacefully going about their business using the spreadsheet, and it just says spreadsheet, word processor. And I was in there, and I clicked on the link and went, whoa, oh my God, and I got all excited. But yeah, they weren't having problems. And then somebody else, like the school, they were just at a big old school board meeting, and the IT director was taking notes and displaying them on the screen above on his laptop, and everybody was saying, oh, OpenOffice is too difficult, we'll never learn it, blah, blah, blah. And he said, just question, what software am I using to take notes? And they said, Word. And he said, no, it's Writer. And they hadn't really noticed. So that's how he got the leverage to start.
Yeah.
And that's the company where 3 years later when the VP or the second from the top administrator came in and started using OpenOffice, that's what turned things around for them.
Now, can you refresh my memory again, Solveig? If I wanted to switch from Microsoft to OpenOffice, what's the typical cost of a business per seat license for OpenOffice?
This is a rhetorical question, right?
Really don't know. I've got to think it's got to be 100, and of course that's just Microsoft Office.
No, I mean Open Office. How much is Open Office per seat?
Nothing.
How about that, huh?
Yes, the cost. But of course, you know, the administrative costs, according to Microsoft, are huge per user. Like, no, don't think so.
That's some crazy stuff.
Well, another real great piece of Microsoft technology is .NET. The other day, the London Stock Exchange had a major problem. They were basically down for 7 hours, which is pretty much the whole trading day for them.
Yeah.
And that could be attributed to their new supposedly real-time trading system. It was built using a .NET framework. In fact, the day they were down was the heaviest trading day of the year. So they probably lost, you know, billions, you know?
Billions, indeed.
Billions.
Isn't .NET just, you know, English for crappy spaghetti code underneath? I mean, not that I'm a programmer, but that's the impression I got.
Well, you guys will all come around and realize that .NET is the wave of the future.
It's cross-platform. No, it's not.
Yeah, it's
wave
runs
of the future.
Windows,
in what, horrible dystopian future?
Yeah. Didn't I read
the New York Stock Exchange kept humming along using their Linux and Unix-based systems without any issues whatsoever.
Didn't I read that CBS, or was it MSN or NBC? One of the two. The one that was streaming the Olympics through Silverlight, didn't they drop their Silverlight technology support after the Olympics? Was I reading that?
Really? Yeah, I only just heard about that Silver thing.
Yeah, I thought I heard somewhere that they were dropping that support because it was too much of a problem or something. Maybe
NBC?
I don't know. Who streamed the Olympics? Was it CBS?
It was NBC.
Yeah.
And I heard that they were not going to be doing any more Silverlight stuff for a while or something.
Huh. Good to hear.
I don't know.
It's
a shame when a superior technology to Flash gets bumped out. Right, Pat? Silverlight.
Yeah, well, the story of Beta.
I don't know. Silverlight, that is...
It's all about the marketing.
Seriously, let's spend $300 million on a marketing campaign instead of fixing the Apple, fixing the actual operating system.
But you know what?
Marketing is most.
They got boatloads of money. That $300 million is what a day worth of profits from their publisher side of the business or something. I don't know.
Something.
So where is Microsoft making all their money? Are they still making money with their OS, or is it strictly Office and the Xbox 360?
I don't know,
but people love their publisher. There's some crack in there somewhere.
Is Microsoft making a profit off of the Xbox side of the business yet?
I have no idea. I know they just slashed the prices, so then you can go and purchase an Xbox 360 for $200 because you're such a big gamer.
You know what? See, that's the sad thing. I mean, when I look at Microsoft's Xbox division and, you know, what they offer for the gaming market, it's very, very tough as a gamer to not be, you know, to not want an Xbox because they've done a really good job on it. It's a great system, apparently. Now, I don't have one, but everybody I've spoken to really loves the Xbox, 360. But on the flip side, it's supporting Microsoft, which, in my opinion, is heinous all around, you know?
Yeah.
If you read our forums the past couple of days, there's been some talk back and forth, and there was mention about... Apple versus, or Pat, you posted the article about somebody in the mainstream press finally admits to Apple being, what, evil?
More evil than Microsoft.
More evil than Microsoft.
No.
And it
but,
came.
Or maybe more, but in a different way.
Well, the whole thing with Apple is they control the whole stack, you know, the hardware and the software and the services.
Yep.
And, it got into a discussion about hacked together systems as opposed to, you know, like Apple, you're right, controls the hardware and the software stack. So you see a lot more stability and a lot more workflow, ease of workflow on the Apple side of things because they work seamlessly together. Apple controls the whole thing, whereas on the Microsoft side of things, you have a variety of hardware and hodgepodge systems, you know, slapped together, and they're trying to work their software on there, and that being a problem. And I was thinking, you know, here Microsoft has this great product called the Xbox 360, and given that they control both the hardware and the software on there, it should be a phenomenal system, yet it's plagued with hardware issues, the infamous Red Rings of Death, and also I hear people saying that, like, its operating system, minus systems, you have to do wacky things like, you know, you still contend with disk fragmentation and slowdowns where you'd have to get better performance out of reformatting the entire...
Well, that's just
hardware.
The file system, though, you know, because they got a sucky file system that has to defrag every once in a while.
Well, right, but
isn't that the Microsoft approach, though, to make it only good enough so that you'll be annoyed but not quite annoyed enough to ditch them?
I don't know. I mean, here...
Yeah, Dan doesn't run any Microsoft right then.
No, I haven't run any. There hasn't been any Microsoft in this household for, God, 5-6 years now?
That's commitment.
Yeah, we burned that out.
And to extend it to the entire household, that requires some...
Yeah, everybody
here runs...
You must
have to clean the bathroom a lot or something.
Yeah, everybody here runs Linux. I mean, my wife and kids have been using Linux. God, my kids have been using it since they were born, and my wife's been using it for... God, she went from Slackware to Ubuntu, and now...
She's hardcore, too.
Well, you know, actually, I set it up for her. She just runs it.
So, okay.
So she has now she has a EEE, which she's still using as Andros OS on it, and she's really happy with it, so... That's what we do. What do you think of the ultra mobile PC market there?
Oh, the little tiny ones.
Yeah.
I've only just actually got exposed to the idea of more than of that there were there out there in April when I was training the MIT folks.
Ah.
Not really close enough to comment, other than I think it's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
I really want one of those one laptops per child.
I have a EEE, one of the first versions that came out, and you know, OpenOffice runs like a champ on this thing. It's great. So.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's a big market right now. Dan, we've talked about it a whole lot. You've blogged about it. You know, the biggest obstacle to Linux is really, you know, the pre-install, the whole concept of the pre-install. Any OS is difficult to install yourself. You know, talk to anybody who's done a Windows install. It's a horror show. You know,
when Ubuntu installs... People don't go out and choose their, phone OS or anything like that. It's been pointed out by somebody.
Right. I mean, I just recently purchased a Dell XPS 1330 pre-installed with Ubuntu, and it's phenomenal.
Excellent.
You know, it's a beautiful machine. Dell.
Yeah, I did some training. I did some cooperative stuff with them at Linux World a year ago because they were doing, it was them pre-installed, I think. With Ubuntu? Yeah.
Yep. On a bunch of machines. They have like one workstation and like three or four different laptops. And I think their new Mini 9 is also, they have three versions that they're selling. And the lower and the mid-level version is Ubuntu, the nice... mobile version that's out now, with the higher end, more heavier version running Windows XP. Speaking of which, we got an email from somebody, I think in Europe. I don't know. I think he's, where was he from? Do you remember, Matt?
United Kingdom.
UK, right?
UK,
he's saying
yes.
that They're not going to offer, Dell is not going to ship Ubuntu on the Mini 9, and he was very disappointed.
Oh. That seems odd, because it's a kind of a non-standard hardware. You'd think you'd, I don't know. Oh, well.
That's the most
annoying
thing.
Somebody has pictures of somebody doing something bad.
That's the most annoying thing. You get, you know, these systems that come out, like in different countries, like in the United States, that Dell ships a system that will run, you know, they'll sell with Linux on it or Ubuntu in the United States, but they won't sell it in Australia. And you get phones that are running, cell phones that are Linux-based in Japan, but you can't get them in the United States. And it's like, you know, come on.
Yeah, pre-installation.
I don't know. And that's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes.
Hey, Solveig, you coming out to the Ohio Linux Fest this year?
Just saw the ad, but no. I got my dad moving into an assisted living place, and I'm doing all sorts of stuff with him.
Yeah, that's slightly more important.
Bring him along.
He does try to. He uses Star Office. I took all the icons off, but like six. And I gave him my really, really easy-peasy workbook, and he worked his way through it like three times, and he figured out the spreadsheet. He's 90, by the way.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, part of it was just, you know, fatherly devotion, but, yeah. And there was it's the first software he'd ever used, essentially.
That's cool. 90 years old, and he's using, you said, Star Office?
Yeah, it's actually, well, OpenOffice 1X, but I use Star Office the term Star Office when I refer to it when I talk to him, so as to not confuse him.
Ah.
Yeah, it's OpenOffice 1X. But yeah, I mean, that's just an example. I mean, and I keep meaning to, but I never get around to it. Just create a ultra mini, simple, only 10% of the icons, you know, none of this digital signature stuff on the menu to confuse people. Just a really simplified version for the people who just want a simple version. And, you know, add some icons, like for just a few things that you can't get off the toolbar now, and just let it be downloaded for people who just want simple.
Yeah, that's great.
Something else from my big list.
So we are a month away now, Pat, aren't we?
Yes, Ohio Linux Fest. It's going to be a great time. You know, everybody who's in neighboring states, please check out the Ohio Linux Fest. It's a great conference. Very community-oriented. We've been going for the last 2 years. This will be our third year, and it gets better with every year. This year, we're going to be doing live broadcasts for the first time.
And we're pretty excited about that. And I want to thank all the donations that we have received so far, and to let people know, those who are coming to the OLF, that we have decided upon for our swag, primary swag this year, hacky sacks, or as the non-trademark name, foot sacks. I don't know, whatever they are. We're gonna get those. They look, Pat, don't you think they look pretty cool? You've seen the picture.
Yes, very nice.
So we're going to be getting about 300 of those to give away. We really appreciate that. We also have more swag coming in from outside vendors that we're going to be giving away in the show. We're really excited about that. So, you know, I want to thank everybody who donated. And if you can't make it, don't worry. We'll make sure that you get yourself some. If you donated, make sure that you get a hacky sack too. I'll probably be sending those out piecemeal throughout the next couple of weeks after we get those, to all those people who donated as a thank you. But it's been awesome. And
yes, thank everybody. We really appreciate it. And you're helping us out. You know, that gives, you know, lots of cool stuff to our listeners and people to show. I'm sure they'll appreciate it, and we appreciate it.
Yep. And you know, Richard Quirin, who has designed the logo that's going to be on there. Thank you to him, too, very much. It's going to be great stuff. I mean, I can't wait. It's About 4 weeks away.
Yes, they do incorporate the Tilt's cockroach logo.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. I don't know what else to say about that, Pat, except...
We're going to have Beth Lynn from the Ohio Linux Fest on in a couple weeks. She's going to come on and give us the preview this time around.
Oh, in addition to that, we are now an O'Reilly partner, yes?
Yes, we are. Good news. O'Reilly is an official sponsor of the Linux Link Tech Show. Thank you, O'Reilly. And what's that going to mean to you guys? It's going to mean that we're going to be doing some O'Reilly book giveaways during our listener call-in episodes. Very cool. And it's also going to mean that we're going to have 35% discounts for all KLLTS listeners. We're going to have a link on our sponsor page. You'll be able to go through there and use the discount code, and you will get 35% off any of the book titles.
Especially if they're books about Windows or .NET or Mono.
You know what? People
or
can
Microsoft
buy whatever
Office.
They want. People can buy whatever they want, man.
That's it. Oh. So the other two guys. Is Mike still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, my God.
There he is.
Would you like to add anything, Mike? You've been quiet the whole time.
You know, I just like the dial-in because I get way better audio quality.
Oh, jeez. So you're saying the VoIP is better than the stream?
Oh, it's way better, dude.
Dan, what are you streaming at? What's the bitrate set at?
Hold on.
What do you normally do, 32? I've done it at 64.
Uh, 16 kilobits?
Oh, you're kidding me, right?
No, I just never adjusted it.
Come on, man. That's not right.
Let's
bump it up to 32.
I will do that next time.
Come on, Dan. Get with the program.
I'm
terrible.
I'm encouraging them to download the episode also.
What's the kilobits that a phone goes at? Do you know, Mike? What is 8, I think?
Yes. So I'm doing double the quality of phone.
But he's coming over a VoIP connection, so it's a little better.
I think this is, what, 64 kilobits?
I don't know if it's 64, but that's whatever the address is configured at, right?
Depends on, are we doing G729 or G... It must be 729.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Whatever
the default address is.
But, I think it auto-negotiates what protocol you're using based upon whatever your, I guess your client, what's the protocol your client's using?
It's actually a phone.
Oh, phone.
Yeah.
So I don't. So you're getting 8 kilohertz anyhow because you're going over a phone, aren't you?
Hmm.
I thought, and when it goes to analog, it's going to hit, it goes down.
No, funny. This is the VoIP phone.
Oh, it's a VoIP phone.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the protocol it's using? Do you know?
I have to look. I don't know.
Mike, you're not winning any favors here anymore. Yeah. What I have to do is read that free book that they put out on Asterisk instead of just...
Yeah, reading the documents definitely helps, Dan, usually.
It does. It's just like, you know, using OpenOffice. You could do a lot with OpenOffice without reading any documentation or anything, but it helps. You know, you learn different things. Learn better ways of doing it, right? Right, Solvay?
Absolutely. And actually, I forgot to insert the most important thing about OpenOffice. When in doubt, right-click.
There you go. What's the tip?
I want to get that out there.
When in doubt, right
click. So many more options than in Word.
Some crazy stuff. Will right-click get me that Easter egg so I can play Space Invaders?
If you do it right. Uh-huh. Actually, I don't think so.
You know what?
It'll get you nearly everything else, though.
So is OpenOffice ever going to come out with a easy way to do, like, publisher-type stuff?
Well, that was one of my thoughts, was to at least create some elegant-looking templates. I've got a version of Publisher sitting up there on my shelf that I haven't installed yet, to really just look at what the essential things are and to try to create just nice pre-made templates with the, you know, the clip art and the color schemes, because you can create all your own colors in OpenOffice, so I can create something very nice looking if I wanted, but I don't think there's any particular plans from the OpenOffice powers that be.
I just posted the Easter egg for Calc. It's done in Calc.
Yeah. I played it. I said it's a fun little diversion.
Not as good as Xbox?
I don't know. I don't have an Xbox. I have a Wii, though, but I don't have an Xbox.
Okay.
Yeah, unlike Alan, who's not on our show, I tend to stay away from Apple and Microsoft products. But, you know, I don't know. Do you have an iPhone, Sylvie?
No.
You have an iPod?
I did not purchase it myself.
You do not what?
I didn't purchase it myself as a gift.
Ah, that's what they all say.
I do download Miss American Life to it and listen to that, and I've downloaded Buffy episodes, of course, and of course the records of music.
Ah. Oh. Mike Kress, you have an iPod, right?
I do.
You
yep.
Stink.
I told you why I bought it. Because it's a giant hard drive and its battery lasts 100 years.
What? My battery, I was like Solvay. I received my iPod. I didn't buy it. And mine lasted 6 months before I finally got fed up with the battery not working right, and I took it apart with a butter knife, and then I got so sick of it.
I got the Series 5 when it first came out, and it's been running perfect ever since. Never crashed once.
It's going to crash tomorrow now.
Yeah, it's going
to. On your way into work, it's going to explode. The battery's going to leak, and your big, large hard drive is going to lose all its data.
Bummers.
So what do you sync that with? With Windows?
Yeah.
Man.
Ooh.
I know.
Did you pass your Linux certification exams?
Man, I was, like, this close. I got to take it again.
Oh, fail.
I was going to say, if you did succeed in getting it, you should have it revoked for using Windows.
Well, you know what it is?
I'm sorry, I got to cut in. I'm getting a low battery.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sylvie.
Phone.
Have a good night.
Have a great one.
Take care.
I was kind of bummed because the CompTIA test was supposed to be vendor agnostic, so I'm thinking pretty much generic questions, and I didn't really sharpen up on the RPM stuff, and that's what got me.
RPM fail.
Yeah, you know, like all the, you know, all the different switches you do for RPM, so that's what got me.
Every one of those answers every one of those questions was easily answered by man RPM.
No, you can't do that on a test.
Well, see?
I know that.
But see, that's one of the crazy things, you know, because if you're at a Linux system, the way to find out what you want to do with an application is fairly easy by if they don't have the man files installed, by just the H switch from a majority of the commands will show you primarily everything you pretty much need to do or would have to do with an RP. But I can understand why they want you to memorize it. So,
well, it's funny because one of the instructors was like, don't memorize anything because, like you say, it's all there, you know, and there's just so much. They just, like you say, do the man and you go get it, you know. But I'll do it again. I'll pass.
So was it like pretty much all RPM as opposed to apt?
There was no Debian on it at all. It was all RPM and just stuff that I wouldn't have thought would have been on the test was there. You know, stuff I thought was important, users, permissions, groups, that kind of stuff. How to install, boot process, all that stuff. I pretty much studied for, but none of it was really there, which was disappointing.
Does Red Hat still use LinuxConf? Remember that? You wouldn't remember this, Mike Kress.
I remember it.
Remember that? That used to be like their handy tool for managing, and it ran in N curses. And there was also a graphical one, I think a GTK version of it, but I remember LinuxConf. I don't think they still do that anymore, do they?
I don't think so.
You should ask Link. He'd know.
Yeah, he's a Red Hat now.
Yeah.
Well, he just did Red Hat school, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he's Red Hat certified, too.
I was talking to one of the instructors. If you get the highest level of Red Hat certification they have, you can literally be an instructor and make like $120,000 a year. They're looking for guys to do that.
It only costs you like $200,000 to get it, though.
To get it. Let's see. Scientology or Red Hat certification? Scientology,
right.
Red Hat certification. I'm joking. It would be Red Hat hands down.
Yeah, that's it's pretty expensive, and you have to. It's all hands on too. I think the engineer stuff, which is really cool, but
that's a really long test, isn't it? It's like 6 hours.
I hear it's grueling. I know. Link did it, and the only other person I know that did it was Faber.
Yeah, it's one of the guys from our local log. He was part of the LPI crew, wasn't he?
Yep. I believe he's
at
still
least
is.
The LPI is distro neutral.
Well, that's the one I'm going to go for now. That's the one I'm trying to study up on. I've got test, you know, prep tests and some online stuff that I found that's been helpful.
Oh, you went for CompTIA, didn't you?
Yeah, I did the 2004 test.
You did that recently?
Yeah.
The 2004 test.
Mm-hmm. CompTIA hasn't updated the test yet.
Since 2004?
Yeah, at least the training center I went to. I mean, the testing center I went to.
You know what? If I'm not mistaken, I think that CompTIA, Novell has some hooks in the CompTIA. I believe that part of Novell's certification program uses the CompTIA Linux test as one of the requirements for a Novell certified engineer.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go through the CompTIA test, which would explain why it's pretty heavily RPM based, because SUSE is RPM based.
Right. And those are the two distros we used in class, was SUSE and Red Hat. So.
And was the class that you took, was it just was it geared towards CompTIA or LPI? Or was it
was actually geared more towards LPI, but the instructor said that CompTIA may have been an easier test to get right away, but now that I've done it, I'm going to go around and go back to the LPI.
See, you know what? Now I'm seeing how it all comes together here, Mike. See, what distros do you run? You run Debian-based systems, right?
I run all Debian.
So you're familiar with Debian-based systems. So you go to a training that does Red Hat and OpenSUSE, and they recommend that you take a test that is geared towards Red Hat and OpenSUSE because they think it would probably be easier. Yet LPI is distro agnostic, so they say don't worry about memorizing things.
Right. So, well, here's the deal. There is no certification test for Debian. I mean, because Debian hasn't gone mainstream on the enterprise side. That's the reason.
Ubuntu's coming out with a certification that I think I just heard about it. Was this on the Ubuntu UK podcast? No, it was on Elixir. aren't they coming out with an Ubuntu certification? And is it?
I think so. Yeah.
Is it CompTIA based or LPI?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Well, I guess we should probably wrap it up, huh?
Yeah, it's getting about that time.
Oh, you're using G711, by the way, for the VoIP.
Is that what it? That's what it's doing.
Yeah, that's why everything works. So I think it's 64K per VoIP client.
Coolness. Well, be that as it may. What are we listening to on the way out tonight, Pat?
Hold on a second, I'll tell you. We are listening to... Wait for it. A band called the Jive-Ass Sleepers, and the song is called KC. They can be found at Magnatune.com. Speaking of Magnatune.com, John Buckman over at Magnatune.com is looking for a part-time Linux admin. So if anybody's interested, please email John. I believe you could work from home, he was saying. So those Linux sysadmins, shoot them an email. Let them know you're interested.
Can I work from my current job?
Yeah, you might be able to. I don't know if your current job will let you do that. You might have to ask.
Oh, they wouldn't know. I'll just SSH in from there to my home box, and then from my home box to Magnitude, huh? Isn't that the
way it is? Before we go, I just wanted to ask you one quick question, Dan. What's a good application to put together a mock-up for a web form with some fields and... I need to put together like a web-based GUI for a presentation. What do you recommend to do that?
You want to do HTML?
Just a mock-up. I don't care. You know, I don't care if there's any code or anything. It's just a presentation.
So you want to do like a graphic?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like a mock-up of what the page is going
to
look like.
Probably one of the easier ones to do. I mean, you could use OpenOffice Draw or you could use Inkscape if you actually want to draw components on there. I mean, you could use the GIMP for that too.
See, I don't want anything too crazy. I just want some form fields kind of thing.
You could try OpenOffice. Do you want to actually have functional form fields, or you just
want to... No, I don't want a functional. It's not going to be functional.
I mean, you could do that in the GIMP.
Is it something to slap together a graphic and do like a screenshot kind of deal?
Yeah, you could do that in the GIMP, or even OpenOffice, any of the drawing programs. OpenOffice Draw, Inkscape, you can do that. The GIMP, you could do it in. If you actually want to attempt to draw out a layout, Inkscape or OpenOffice Draw might be easier to use than the GIMP. Because all you're doing is just taking blocks of text. I mean, you could even do Scribus, too. It all depends on which application you're more comfortable with, because you're just doing a graphical representation of your layout, right?
That's all it's going to be.
You know, a lot of people I work with, the graphic designers, do that in Adobe either Photoshop or Illustrator. So, I mean, GIMP, Scribus, any one of those will allow you to do them. What are you most familiar with?
I don't know Scribus at all, to be honest. I know GIMP a little bit.
GIMP might be the way to go. It's not that difficult to do. I mean, Scribus is pretty simple. I mean, it'll take you a few minutes to get accustomed to it, but essentially you're just like drawing blocks on. I start with the GIMP since you're familiar with it, because you're just dropping text in there and then you can position it wherever you want. You're not looking to do anything complicated, right?
No, simple stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to do like a label to the form field, I mean, just drop some text in there, create a form field that's just a rectangle, a white rectangle, and move it to wherever you want to.
Right, and just resize it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably going to be the fastest and easiest way to go, since you're that familiar with it. That or OpenOffice Draw.
I'll try it out. I'll let you know.
If you need any, advice or assistance on that, just hit me up on the IRC or something.
Will do.
All right. Mike Caress says Vizio.
No.
So this music that we're going to play, it kind of sounds like, I don't know, maybe 70s porno music.
All right. Well, I'm excited. We'll be back again next week, everybody. Thank you.
Have a good one, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Was track number one from the album Getting Down to Business by the Jive Ass Sleepers from Magnitude.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
It's over.
That's it.
So, Dan, we got the order in for the hacky sacks?
No, I'm going to be doing that this week by Friday.
Yeah, but how long is it going to take for them to deliver? Did they give an estimate?
Well, it takes about 10 to 12 days from proof to shipping. And then, so it should probably be here by the end of the month if I order it today, this week.
Alrighty then. Well, we should get on that. Hello?
What? Yeah, I will be doing that.
I thought you died.
No, I'm about to die. But
you're spacing.
Yeah, I gotta get this show out. So I will definitely. I'll see about putting in the order tomorrow.
Excellent, man. Hope you feel better, right?
Thanks a lot, man. I'll talk to you later.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye.